Hello, everyone, and welcome to Football Fights number 2, brought to you by Pride of Detroit, with participation from all the other NFC North blogs from SB Nation. We're sending you this out live to the nation here, prideofdetroit.com. And what are the other blogs here? AcmePackyCompany.com, WindyCityGridiron.com, DailyNorseman.com. The whole NFC North is here, represented once again. I am Chris Lemieux on Twitter at Detroit Southern. From Pride of Detroit, we have here Mike Payton. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Chris.
And we have here from Acme Packing Company, Evan Tex Western.
Evening, gentlemen.
Champion number one from the last show. And then Lester Wiltfong from Windy City Gridiron.
What's up, guys?
And joining us now and replacing Arif Hassan, who could not be here, from Daily Norseman, Ted Glover, who is very angry he is getting, quote, sloppy seconds.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem.
Better second. I guess second place is the first loser, but, you know, whatever.
It's what happens here. But you know what? There are no losers on the football fights. We're doing this out in the streets. Call quality here is going to be a little lower than what it usually is on our POD cast, just because of my location tonight. But we keep rolling. We keep rolling. We're doing this. We're doing this on Thursday night. Football is back, my friends, and we are out here, and we're going to start having these fights. Let's talk about the NFC North, because Sunday is coming up close. Already we have an NFC North showdown. Is it, forgive me if I'm wrong, is it Bears-Packers?
This weekend? No, it's Bears-Texans.
Bears-Texans. Okay, I completely
screwed that. The whole text thing threw you off.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not good with schedules, so... Either way, the NFC North gets back in action. That giggling there is Ryan Matthews, by the way, at Ryan_POD. He's my companion here to help make sure I get everything right. And we've revised our scoring here a little bit. You'll see in a second how we do this.
Yeah, I'll try to keep my giggling to a minimum.
Yeah, okay. So we all know how this works. I hand out questions. We go around the room. You all get points. We're now doing this. I'm going to hand out points varying from 1 to 5 for everyone, which means I'm going to actually have to keep a closer tally of the points so I don't like completely screw it up. But other than that, we're just going to roll. All right. We're just going to roll. I'm getting the stopwatch set up here. We're going to roll here. We got questions here from the Pride of Detroit readers, and we're going to go. So let's start with this one from, Joseph R. Sweeney 5, which, you know, the NFC North pulled the AFC South and NFC East for out of conference this year. And as he points out, these are two of the weaker divisions in football as of the end of 2015. And I'm just going to go around the room to answer the question. Do you think this makes the schedule for NFC North teams easy or not? Or at least in this case, do you think this makes it an easy schedule for your particular team? So first, to get the perspective of the Vikings, let's go to Ted.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes, especially in the predicament the Vikings find themselves in with a brand new quarterback that they traded for less than a week ago. So, yeah, when you look at teams like, for example, the Vikings open up against Nashville on Sunday, that's a lot better opponent to have to worry about than somebody not named Nashville. So, yeah, I think it definitely makes the Vikings schedule more palatable, easier to navigate, and gives them time to get Sam Bradford more comfortable with the offense before they can turn him loose.
Tex, what do the Packers think about their schedule now looking at this?
Yeah, I think absolutely it sets up better for the Packers and for the other teams in the North. I mean, you look last season, it was the NFC West and the AFC West. So not only do you have the added challenge of playing teams like Seattle and Denver, who obviously won the Super Bowl, and Arizona in that mix. But you've also got all that travel built in as well. Now you're going NFC East, AFC South, like you said. That's a much less burdensome travel schedule, in addition to just playing teams that just frankly aren't nearly as good as some of the teams out in the West divisions of both conferences.
All right, Mike, what about the Lions?
Yeah, I think it definitely does. I mean, you look at last year and, you know, who the Lions played, and they got hit with all these playoff teams and winning teams right off the bat. And this year they're looking at a bunch of teams that didn't make the playoffs last year. And even the ones that did in their divisions, like the Texans or the Redskins, are two playoff teams that weren't really going anywhere. And I'm not sure that either one of them can go back to the playoffs this year. So I think it definitely helps the Lions in that respect.
All right. And last but not least, Lester, let's talk about the Bears and their schedule.
Yeah, I mean, definitely going to help them out. I mean, the strength of schedule obviously is good now for all the NFC North teams. You know, the best team of all the ones they're going to play from both those divisions is probably the Texans, and the Bears are fortunate to get them right off the bat. I mean, if you're going to catch the Texans, who I think is going to be a pretty good team, you know, catching them, you know, in week one where they're, you know, the whole offensive game plan, you know, it's still going to be a work in progress for those guys. You catch a Brock Osweiler where he's still trying to learn everything, and the brand new running back, some brand new receivers. So for the Bears' point of view, you know, they're getting lucky by getting the best team of the group in week one.
All right, Ryan, anything we need to clear up?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think all everybody right. did a fine job.
Fantastic. We're already off to a pretty good start. I am going to give, just to show how much of a good starter off, I'm giving 3 points to everyone.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
I think that's about...
Feeling generous today.
I think that's about fair. Hey, yeah, we're starting off on a positive note.
That is nice, but I'm going to go ahead and use my liberal ability as stat boy to give Tex an extra point, because I thought his point was so well articulated, and what would the show be if it wasn't for a Lions fan giving the Packers 3 points?
Delusion. You are in bed with Tex, and everyone knows it.
That would be 6 points you should be giving him then, isn't it?
All right. And minus 1 point to Ted.
I will uphold that, actually.
I think Ted ruling. Should get minus 1 point for saying that the Vikings will cut loose Sam Bradford.
All right, I'll combine that.
That was a good line.
So, okay, so we've got two at the final score for Ted. We're going to try to keep these talks about this stuff to a minimum. But let's move along here. NFC North away games. Which NFC North teams are you most concerned about playing on their home turf? So this is from Waybay 51. So this year we've got a brand new stadium for the Vikings, beautifully paid for with taxpayer money. This new wave of stadium that just seems to be these massive, gaudy looking like fake glass spaceships that I know the Raiders are like trying to pitch to Vegas to bilk them out of their money now. So, and then of course you have the classic stadiums. You've got Soldier Field, you've got Lambeau, and you've got Ford Field for the Lions, which is just kind of there. So I want your opinion from the perspective of your particular team, which away game in conference are you least liking to play right now? And we will start with Mike.
Well, it's obvious for the Lions. It's Green Bay. They've won there one time, and you know, since 1991. You know, I don't know if they can go back and do that again. I don't think that this was some sort of thing where they've all of a sudden opened the floodgates and now they're going to win in Green Bay every year. I'm not too worried about Chicago. Obviously, we haven't lost there in 3 years. And the new Minnesota field, I don't know if that really is going to make much of a difference as to how good of a team
does
or how
it,
bad a team
does is. It matter at all to you that the Lions will be playing in Green Bay in September this year?
I think that makes a huge difference. Obviously, they're so used to going there in the cold of the winter, and I think that getting this game out of the way early, kind of to what Lester was saying earlier about the Texans. That's kind of a big deal because they got Jordy Nelson coming back and all these things here, and they're going to have to kind of regel, I would imagine. And, I think still Green Bay is going to be the hardest, but I'm glad they're getting it out of the way here.
All right, let's go to Lester. Let's talk about the Bears. Which away game for the Bears probably scares you the most?
Probably the Minnesota game, just because the Vikings got a pretty good defense. You know, I'm not sure about the quarterback situation there, if Sam Bradford's going to be turning it loose anytime soon. But just that defense, a brand new stadium, it's going to be pretty loud from what I understand. And then I think we all saw last year that the Bears, they own it in Green Bay now. So I think it's all good there.
Tex, what do you say?
there's no question about this. It's the Minnesota game. That comes in week two. It comes on Sunday night. It's the first regular season game in that stadium. Vikings wanted it that way, so for sure that crowd is going to come up fired up. The Vikings are going to be excited to open up their new building. There's no contest. It's definitely that Minnesota game week two.
All right, and last but not least, Ted.
Chicago. It's always Chicago. I don't know why, but it's harder for the Vikings to win in Chicago than it is for Amelia Earhart to navigate the Pacific Ocean. They can't win there. They just never do, except like they won there last year, and then they won before that, I think, was 2007. And they barely won in Chicago last year. It took late fourth quarter heroics for a lot of wins. So, Green Bay is always tough. It's always a tough environment. And it's late in the year. But the Vikings have, you know, they won there last year. They've had a little bit of recent success there. I don't know why Chicago has been this voodoo hex, but I'm going to say Chicago. The Bears always seem to play very well at home against the Vikings. The Vikings always seem to never play well in Chicago for whatever reason. And they didn't for 3.5 quarters last year. And so we'll see. It's always the Bears for me on the road in the NFC.
Always the Bears. All right. Let's give out, I'm going to give 3 points to Ted, 2 to Tex, and let's go with 1 to Lester and Mike. Not because 1 is bad, but I'm feeling a little less generous on this one. Ryan, you got to weigh in with anything here?
Nope. I have nothing to say.
Want to give out a point?
Nope. I have no points to give.
Okay. Let's talk a little more far-fetched out here. We have a question from Mr. Zebra. Hello, Mr. Zebra. If you had to relocate your team, where would you send it? Kind of the nightmare out here. I mean, we don't have St. Louis in here as a city, although I know my dad kind of like grew up as a St. Louis Cardinals fan and stopped being an NFL fan when the Cards moved to Phoenix. But let's start with Texas time. Where would you send the Green Bay Packers if, God forbid, they had to leave Green Bay? If, like, say, a global warming destroyed the Lambeau, or like there was a cheese meltdown or something, or a great cheese famine.
Well, this might be a bit of a cop out, but especially considering that the city is 2.5 hours to the southwest.
I'm gonna go Madison. Okay. I thought you were going to go Milwaukee, but
and I can't go Milwaukee because technically Milwaukee is part of the home market. There's Milwaukee season ticket holders, but I think Madison would be the perfect place for it. They've already got a great football stadium with a lot of history there. So you've got that parallel. You've got a rabid fan base, and I think it's a bigger city than Green Bay is. So you're not really losing any revenue or anything like that. You're able to keep the fan base geographically. So that's going to have to be my pick.
All right. Lester, what would you say if the Bears had to leave the friendly confines of Chi-Town?
Oh, man, that's a crazy question. I guess we're trying to not do something local in Illinois here. So I guess that kind of takes out Rockford, Waukegan. I guess probably maybe St. Louis, just because it's.
Oh my God! You are making
really needy right now.
You are making the Cubbies fans really angry saying that, though.
That's all right. I'm a Tiger fan, so it's okay.
Oh, okay. Hey, how you go? How you doing?
Nice,
Mike. Where are we going to move the Lions?
Bonus point for Tigers.
Yeah, I'll think about that, Mike. Where are we moving the Lions?
Well, I would move them to Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis.
Memphis is, a lot of people don't ever talk about Memphis, but it's an awesome area. They've got such a large diversity of people there. There's plenty of room for a brand new stadium to go in where the pyramid is, if anybody's ever heard of the pyramid. They could knock that down and put in the new stadium. It could be close to the downtown area, so everybody could go to the game and they can hit Beale Street and get drinks afterwards. And they, I mean, it's just a great town. and plus I used to live there, so I know how great it is, and I think that they would do awesome with an NFL team.
All right, Ted?
I would go St. Louis for a couple of reasons. One, I live here. So, I mean, I would get season tickets. It would be fantastic just from a purely selfish perspective. But having lived through the Viking Stadium fight and lived through the Rams Stadium fight or relocation process when they moved from here out to L.A., the city of St. Louis actually had a really cool stadium proposal on the table. Would really done a lot in terms of construction jobs and looking to shore up part of the area of the city right on the Mississippi River that needs some sort of improvement. I just think it would have been a good deal for the city of St. Louis long term if the Rams had stayed here. So, yeah, if I can't move to St. Paul and keep them in Minnesota, if that's not an option, it would be St. Louis.
No, if you were going to keep them in Minnesota, I think I would make your only option to be like Bemidji.
I'd go to Duluth, actually. If I had to move them, if I could keep them in Minnesota, but I had to leave the Twin Cities, I'd go to Duluth, put the stadium right on the lake, and it would be like an Uber Soldier Field with the wind coming off the lake here.
Oh, man. Okay. This is a hard one to score. I'm going to give 4 to Ted because that's some really meaty stuff about the St. Louis proposal that I did not actually know right now. So that's pretty cool. I'm going to give 3 to Lester, 2 to Tex. Mike, you would have gotten 4 here, but you mentioned knocking down the pyramid, and we can't do that. We just can't have that. We just can't have that happening. I know the pyramid you're talking about. It's like the Cabela's pyramid.
It's actually Bass Pro Shop.
Is it
now.
Bass Pro Shop? Okay. Either way, yeah. we can't knock that down. That's a monument to Caucasia.
No, I've lived in Memphis and nobody goes to the pyramids.
Yeah, so I know. No one goes there because it's still. No one goes into the pyramids anyway. The real pyramids anyway. Ryan, what we got?
So that was Lester who was asking for extra points because he's a Tigers fan, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I actually worked in – he would have gotten 2, so I gave him an extra 1 to 3. So.
All right, so we're going to make that 4 because Lester is a Tigers fan.
All right.
And that sounds good to me.
Lifelong Tiger.
Yeah.
Crap, I'm a Red Wings fan. Do I get bonus points?
You're getting 4
Red
points,
Wings,
Lester.
Red Wings. I mean, I think we learned last time that Tex was a Red Wings fan.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So,
that did
go. Plus, that's a little easier because there's, like, no hockey team in Wisconsin. But, all right, next question we have here. This one's actually from Ryan. You want to do your question, Ryan?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, you can ask it if you'd like.
Okay, sure. All right, this is for Lester and Tex particularly, and then we'll format this a little differently for Ted and Mike. So I want to know from let's start with Lester. Let's start with Lester on this. Why will Josh Sitton make a difference for the Bears in 2016?
Well, the biggest reason is the O-line for the Bears had some depth issues there. So obviously getting a high-quality starter like Josh Sitton's a big deal for them. I mean, they lost a couple guys to retirement that they planned on being part of their depth. They lost Aronis Grassou to an injury out for the year. So they were forced to have Ted Larson in his starting lineup at center, with the real promising rookie, Cody Whitehair at left guard. But now they got Sitton coming in. He'll slide into his natural left guard spot. Josh Sitton has been kind of fast-tracked here to be the next center now. I'm not sure if he'll start this week, but if not this week, he's going to start probably week 2 because he's just a much better player than Ted Larson from a physical standpoint. He's just I'm trying to figure out why the Packers cut him in the first place. We talked a little bit on the pre-show. There's just some rumors out there, but nothing has been solid from the Packers. From what I can understand, he's still playing at the top of his game, and this is going to be a great guard tandem now for the Chicago Bears.
All right, well, let's go to Tex then. Tell us why the Packers will not need Josh Sitton in 2016.
Well, you've got a fourth-year guard in Lane Taylor who's been up and coming over the last couple of years. He was set to be a restricted free agent this offseason. The Packers, instead of giving him just a one-year tender, they gave him a two-year contract, which was a bit of a surprising move, but it shows some faith in the guy. He played very well in Week 17 last season when he was asked to fill in for Sitton when Sitton bounced off the left tackle, which that turned out to be a a disaster. But I think in Taylor you've got a solid young player. He's up and coming. He's not the pass protector Sitton is, and that's a tall order because he's still as good as anybody protecting against the pass rush in the interior of the line. So that's certainly going to be a drop off, but over the course of the next half season or so, I think you'll see Taylor develop into at least a decent starter, which combined with the veterans on the rest of that line should still make the Packers line very formidable.
All right. I guess we should probably just go to general comments about Josh Sitton then. Let's go to Ted first. Does Josh Sitton make a difference in how you see the Bears and the Packers on the Vikings schedule?
Overall, I think it makes the Packers a little bit weaker on their line and the Bears a little bit. I mean, look, Josh Sitton's an all-pro, so he's going to be an asset to the Bears. I'm a little miffed that a former ex-Packer didn't come to the Vikings because I thought that was now federal law. So whatever. Cool, fine. I don't really overall. I don't think it changes the balance of power, if you will, between the two teams greatly. I mean, he's a great player, and he's going to help the Bears. And I think short term, it's going to hurt the Packers. I don't understand. I mean, I get, you know, he's 30 and he's had back injuries, but he had a great year, and I'm kind of surprised they let him go. I think maybe they let him go a year or two ago. But overall, they're still going to be both games against all four games against the teams are going to be close games. They usually are. So I don't know that Josh Sitton will be the reason the Vikings win or lose any of those games, though. I mean, he's good. I'm not saying right. He's not, okay. But I don't think he's the guy that's going to shift things either way.
And Mike, what do you say about Josh Sitton?
Okay, well, here's the way I see it is I think maybe we're making a too big of a deal out of Josh Sitton. I mean, I look at it like this. There's a reason a player gets cut. Maybe he did have a good year last year, but maybe he was looking like he was not going to have a good year this year. Maybe, you know, I mean, when you cut a player, you're basically saying they're not good enough to be on my team. So I don't think it's a coup for the Bears to go out and get him. I think it's the Bears signing another old free agent like they've been doing for the past 3 or 4 years. They keep signing old guys, Eddie Royal, Antrell Roll, and now Josh Sitton. And to Ted's point, no, I don't think that Josh Sitton changes anything as far as the division goes. I don't think that he makes the Bears a better running team. I don't think that he's keeping Jay Cutler from throwing interceptions or keeping Jay Cutler off the ground. I really just don't see the big thing in this, like most people do.
All right. I'm going to need help on this one, Ryan. I'm giving everyone 2 points across the board. What do you say here?
Oh, man. All some pretty decent answers. I don't know. I think that maybe I tend to agree with Mike a little bit. I do agree with Mike in the sense that maybe we're making a big deal out of Josh Sitton, but then also, I kind of agree with Ted in the idea that it's not really going to do too much to throw out the balance of power. It'll kind of make the Packers a little more leaky along their offensive line. Maybe they'll have some growing pains, but I think the Bears will stand to improve in the short term. So I think 2 points around the way sounds good.
Okay, let's do that. Let's see what we got here. What else do I have? AJ Mojo had a couple questions. I like this one the best. What are the worst and best draft picks from your respective team over the past 5 years? We're going to have some fun with this one. Let's start with Tex, because quite honestly, I'm struggling to even think about. I don't even know how I don't know how the Packers get players. I don't see them draft. I don't see them sign free agents. I just assume they kind of just sprout out of the ground. So tell us, who is the best and worst draft pick from the Packers over the past 5 years?
Well, draft and develop is Ted Thompson's mantra. So that right there is kind of tells you all you need to know about his player acquisition strategy.
Yeah, maybe I just black out when they're drafting. I don't know.
Apparently. But as far as best draft picks, I think you're going to see HaHa Clinton Dix, first round pick from 2014.
Great
I think
name.
This you're going to see him be an all pro safety this season. He's taken a big step, and I think that's his next step.
You're not just saying that because you have it for your avatar on Twitter either.
No, I'm not, but that certainly doesn't hurt. But,
so it's a top name out there.
It absolutely is, and he's been absolutely fantastic in his first couple of years. I think you look back a little bit into like 2013, they got a real nice pick out of Micah Hyde in the fifth round. He's done a couple of, and even last year with getting the defensive backs with Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins, those are some solid picks as well. As far as bad picks, the easy one is Kyrie Thornton. He's a defensive tackle, round three, 2014. I think he lasted 1 year on the practice squad. He was on injured reserve for his rookie year, and then he got cut at the end of his second camp. So he's an easy pick. Carl Bradford was a linebacker that year, too, who spent a year on the practice squad and a year inactive. And then finally, the last one I got to mention is Corey Linsley. Again, I keep going to 2014, but the center out of Ohio State picked in the fifth round. He's been the starter for the last two years, and he's not starting now.
Yeah, we'll try to keep it to one each now. But Kyrie Thornton, who is now on the Detroit Lions roster, did he make that final cut, Ryan? I forget.
Yes, he did.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Mike, let's talk about the Lions and their draft history. Last 5 years.
The best pick, obviously, has to be Zeke Alonso. He's a guy that changes the game. He's always beating the tackle, whether he's sacking the quarterback or getting pressure. Despite what Pro Football Focus says, he's one of the best defensive ends in the entire league. I put him right in the same, right under J.J. Watt. And maybe I'm crazy, maybe I'm a slappy for that, but I really think that's how good he is. And the best thing is he's only been playing football for a short period of time. He has not reached his full potential yet. And that's scary. As far as worst draft pick, I'm sure 65% of Lions fans would think I would say Eric Ebron, and that is not true. I think Nick Fairley was the worst pick of the last 5 years. And yeah, we got some decent play out of him, but he took a lot of plays off. He took a lot of games off. And he came with so much hype, and he never lived up to any iota of it whatsoever. And, you know, he wound up and then, of course, when he left, you know, for St. Louis, it became this thing of, you know, yeah, we didn't just lose Sue. We also lost Sue and Fairley, even though Fairley only had, like, I believe 17 tackles the year before. So I just don't like Nick Fairley, and I think there's a lot of Lions fans that feel the same way.
All right, let's go to Ted. Let's talk about the Vikings.
The best, I think right now it's a tie between Harrison Smith and Anthony Barr. Harrison Smith taken in 2012, Barr taken in 14. Smith is a perennial all-pro. I think Barr is probably the best young linebacker in the NFL. So it's like 1 and 1A. I could go either way. The worst, I'm gonna go with offensive lineman David Yankee. He was taken in the fifth round of 2014, Stanford guy. A lot of people thought he might have been a big steal. He graded out, I think, pre-draft, maybe second or third round, and he just never developed. So I would probably go with Yankee.
All right, Lester, let's talk about the Bears.
For the best, it's pretty obvious. You got to go Kyle Long, 2013, 3 years in the league, 3 Pro Bowls, 2 at right guard, 1 at right tackle. His first Pro Bowl could have been because it is the long name. But just when you watch him play, he's just he's such a good physical specimen. He's such a mauler, but he's also a really good athlete. Then even last year when he played tackle, he started off the year real rough. I know that first game against the Packers, he struggled a lot at tackle. But the second time around with the Packers, he really did a good job. He didn't give up any sacks or hurries in that game. So Kyle Long is definitely the best. For the worst in the last 5 years, I could probably fill up a whole hour podcast talking about the Bears, the bad draft picks. But I'll go Shea McClellan, 2012. Just a guy that was picked. He didn't really have a good position. He was drafted to play the Tampa 2 defensive end, which, you know, from a physical standpoint, he could have fit, but he just wasn't comfortable doing that. The Bears moved around to a 4-3 at linebacker. Then he went to 3-4 inside linebacker, and now he's on the Patriots doing who knows what he's doing over there. So I got to go Shane McClellan as the worst, and Long is the best.
Oh, boy. Okay, Ryan, what do you think here?
Man, I mean, for somebody who won over my heart like Kyrie Thornton in the preseason when he suplexed a player, I don't like hearing that he's not going to bring me much much other than that from Tex. But yeah, I don't. All good answers. I'm surprised, Mike, that you went with Nick.
Yeah,
Farrelly.
I am too. Nick Farrelly, really. I think a little more highly of Nick Farrelly, I think.
Well, I just look at it, you know, we've had so many bad draft picks. I just took the angle of, look, I mean, we expected this guy to be amazing. When he was drafted, most of us jumped out of our chairs with excitement, and we got nothing out of him. We didn't get anything that was worth having. And you know, he couldn't stay healthy. He was in trouble with the law. He just gave us a bad name. He made the team look lazy, and I just don't like
it. I don't know, man. I don't know. I got to – I was going to go through all around. I got to deduct a point there, though. Not feeling the Farrelly hate. I mean, I get it, but I don't know. It just seems like there was a rich field there, and I could have probably gotten something else out of you.
Also, Ted, just real quick, the fact that the Lions missed out on Anthony Barr by one pick and ended up with Eric Ebron, who the jury's still out on Eric Ebron, but the fact that the Lions missed out on Anthony Barr, it
I thought it was
it,
all
it
about
keeps me up at night.
I thought it was all about Darren Arnold.
Oh, no, we don't talk about him.
Well, okay. I'll tell you, I was irritated. I was like flat out mad the Vikings drafted Moore because I thought they were going to get Teddy Bridgewater there, and they didn't. And I thought, man, now they're not going to get Moore back. And so for like from pick 8 or 9, whatever it was, until the Vikings traded back into the bottom of the first round with Seattle to get Teddy, I was just fuming mad. I was just furious.
Mad
I was
online.
My Twitter feed was nothing but blind, drunk rage.
Mad online.
I actually remember that, Ted. It was fun to watch.
God. I'm gonna find Ted and follow him on Twitter then, yeah. All right. Let's see here. This one's gonna be so we're gonna do this a little differently. Let's start with Ted on this one because oh, man, we need to talk about the quarterback situation. We need to talk about Sam Bradford. El Fuego right. wants to know where he ranks among NFC quarterbacks. I think I'll make that the question for everyone else. I don't know. I just want general thoughts on Sam Bradford. Do you think it's working out? Do you like let me set the table here for you, Ted. Actually, this is a great way for you to respond. I think it was Aaron Schatz from Football Outsider pointed out in the Football Outsider's Almanac that they had wrote that Sean Hill and Sam Bradford were essentially the same quarterback except for their contract. So please respond to that the best you can. Do you agree with that? Do you disagree with that? What do you think?
I disagree with it. I mean, look, Sam Bradford is not lived up to the billing of a former number one overall pick. But to say him and Sean Hill are the same guy is just sophistry. It just is. I mean, you watch Sean Hill play. He can't throw an out route. He can't throw a comeback. He can't throw a deep ball. He just has no arm strength. Sam Bradford can make the throws. It's just, you know, he's been knocked with injuries and inconsistency. He's played on terrible teams. He's played with terrible lines blocking for him. I'm not saying come to Minnesota is the magic elixir cure-all for him. I am saying that in light of what the Vikings had on the TJ Maxx clearance bin quarterback rack when Teddy got hurt compared to Sean Hill and Taylor Heinicke, an undrafted free agent who never took a live snap last year and missed all of training camp for the preseason because he put his foot through a glass door when he was drunk trying to break back into his buddy's apartment yeah, Sam Bradford's a pretty good choice. I'll take him.
Okay.
He's demonstrably better than Sam Bradford.
All right, let's.
Sam Bradford's demonstrably better than Sean Hill.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go to Mike first. Where are we ranking Sam Bradford among all of the NFC North quarterbacks?
See, I guess I feel a little bit differently than most do. I know that Sam Bradford, I think you could definitely probably call him a bust as far as being the number one overall pick. But I look at the Vikings picking up Sam Bradford without the whole first round pick that they gave away and the other pick. This, at the moment that they got him, was probably the best thing that could have happened to them as far as picking up a quarterback that was available or in trade. The best type of situation that could have happened. But, you know, saying that, to say this, you know, Sam Bradford is what he is. And I don't see him as even a mid-tier quarterback in this league. But in that offense, you know, it's kind of hard to really – in that offense, he's going to be asked to be a game manager. Do I think he can manage a game? I think he can. But if they ask him to do anything else other than that, I really don't see Sam Bradford succeeding in Minnesota, and I think he'll probably – find the bench sooner rather than later.
All right, Lester, where are we ranking Sam Bradford?
As far as the NFC North, I probably think he's probably the worst of the starting four in the NFC North. But as far as overall, you know, I don't think Sam Bradford's as awful as the Twitter GMs have made him out to be. He's not a top tier quarterback. Obviously, he's probably not even one of these average guys. He's a touch below average, but you know, like someone mentioned earlier, you know, he never really had a good team around him. I think being in that Vikings offense with a legitimate running back, I think it's going to help Bradford. And if he can manage the game and not do stupid things with the ball and just do what he has to do, I think the Vikings will be okay.
All right, Tex.
Well, first of all, Ted, you're not going to give any love to the Marvel from Wisconsin, Joel Stavi. I'm a little hurt.
No,
here.
I will not ever. As better dead than red.
Oh, and
I,
wow.
As a matter of fact, in a post I did on DN, kind of trying to defend the Bradford trade, which I thought I did a good job of, I nicknamed Joel Stavi Joel Stigmata because he makes my eyes bleed when I watch him play quarterback.
Yeah, well, you can join up with a lot of Wisconsin fans in that. But getting back to Bradford, I think the what I'm going to be interested to see about him is if the plans that it seemed like Minnesota had to run Adrian Peterson a little less, work Jerick McKinnon more into the offense, if those kind of go by the wayside and they decide to give Peterson 300, 350 carries this year. I mean, that's kind of what I'm expecting. Because they, you know, they've got a quarterback who's just still learning the offense now after being there for a week. And as far as Bradford goes, you know, there's a couple of decent receivers there. I like Stephon Diggs a lot. I think Charles Johnson can provide some benefit there. But you know, Bradford, like you said, he's probably gonna be a game manager. He's gonna be handing off to AP a lot. And you know, I agree. I think he's probably fourth place in the NFC North among the starters. But I also agree with Ted that I think he's definitely a significant upgrade over Sean Hill, and he at least gives Minnesota at least a semi-competent option back there when they do need to drop back and throw on third and long.
All right, long shot here. Mike, I'm sorry, Ryan, are you still here?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah,
okay,
I'm in
good,
here.
Good, good. Okay, we're having some technical difficulties. Ryan, what do you think of all these answers?
From what I've heard, I tend to agree with a lot of kind of what's been said. Joel Stav is pretty much worthless, but I think that ultimately it was the Vikings' decision to go all in this year, and whether or not you believe Bradford is the definition of all in, it's much better. Let me say this to Ted: it's much better to give up just a first round pick than a first round pick and a significant piece, right?
Yeah. I don't know if you guys read the Monday Morning Quarterback column from Peter King, and that Rick Spielman said that when, you know, Teddy got hurt, he started making calls about possible trades. He said, look, there's blood in the water. I got a lot of sympathy, but there was no free rides. It was a first-round pick and one of our core young guys. And the way he didn't name a player, but with the clues he dropped, they were talking – you know, Anthony Barr, Harrison Smith, one of those guys. And that just would have been completely unpalatable for Vikings fans. I mean, because they still have a really good team. Even if Sean Hill had been the guy, they still had a good team. You've got a very strong defense. You've got a very strong running game. You've got an upgraded receiver core. You throw a guy like Sam Bradford in there who has, in the past, he's had good seasons. So I think a first round pick is not the end of the world. I mean, cause they still have a lot of draft picks going into next year's draft. And they're thinking is, look, hey, if we make a run, which is our intent, and we get to the divisional round of the playoffs or whatever, you know, now they're picking in the mid to late 20s. He's got 2 third-round picks, 2 fourth-round picks. Rick Spielman could conceivably use those picks and move up into the middle of the second round or the top half of the second round. And now you're looking at maybe a top 10 or 15 pick in the second round and a lower second round pick. And that's a lot easier to digest than no first round pick at all. So we'll see how it works out though.
All right. Looks like we've got a couple more questions here. We're going to tally up the scores here. Ryan, did you want to give out a point for anything in there?
Just for Ted, because I feel really bad that Sam Bradford's your quarterback and not Teddy Bridgewater.
I virulently disagree with all of you because I agree with the Football Outsiders people. I have no love for Sam Bradford, but some compelling arguments all around. So I think, I was going to give 4 to Ted and Tex, 3 to Lester and Mike. So that makes it 5 for Ted in that round. So, kind of starting to tally up the scores here, but we got 2 more questions. Let's do a little lighter one from Underdog, which I want to know from each of your states for where your teams are. So for Ted, I know you're in St. Louis, but you're arguing on behalf of Minnesota here. What is the best movie that is set within the confines of the state where your team plays? So let's see here. Let's start with Tex, because honestly, I don't know of many movies that are set in Wisconsin.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot that I can think of at the top of my head. So the one that comes to me that I'm going to have to go with is Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield. it's set at University of Wisconsin. You know, follows his kid back to college, and there's that whole deal. So, partially because that's about the only one that I can think of. Unless we're counting the fact that Chris Farley went to Marquette in Tommy Boy, then if that, even though it's set in Sandusky, Ohio, if I can count that, then Tommy Boy gets my vote. But
Ryan, can he count Tommy Boy?
I'm waiting for a ruling. No, that does not count.
I don't think
it does not count. It was a nice stretch though.
That's the best I got. So okay. Yeah, I guess it's okay. Back to School.
Mike, man, some good movies in Detroit. Let me know what you think. Which one's the best? Be very careful on this answer. Be very careful on this answer.
There's one right answer, Mike.
Well, I'm going over all of your heads, and I'm going with True Romance.
What?
That's a good movie. That's a good movie.
Set it in Detroit.
Mike.
It's not Detroit Rock City. It's not Beverly Hills Cop.
No, it's neither of those. It's
it's RoboCop.
It's RoboCop, man. Mike.
According to Rotten Tomatoes, it's definitely not RoboCop.
Well,
it's
Rotten Tomatoes is wrong.
Have you seen True Romance? I mean, this movie
I don't care.
Is
it's
incredible.
RoboCop.
All-star cast. The story is awesome. It's one of Tarantino's first movies. It's incredible.
It's a great movie.
I'm sticking to my convictions. True Romance is the best movie.
I'll plant my flag on your hill, brother. That's a great movie.
Okay, fine. Ted, let's talk about Minnesota.
Grumpy Old Men.
Grumpy Old Men. Okay. Yeah. I thought we were going to get the Fargo but over the plate, but I like Grumpy Old Men.
North Dakota, and so it's not technically Minnesota.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It is North Dakota. Okay, I always get those places. You know what it was? It was the Fargo, like, miniseries that it was actually technically in, like, in Minnesota. So I think I got screwed up there. So.
It's that Moorhead or something.
I hate the movie, but I really like the TV series.
Yeah. Great TV series. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Lester, a lot of good movies from Chicago and in Illinois. What are you going with here?
We can go Home Alone. We can go Ferris Bueller. But I think you got to go with an all-time classic. It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas. half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. You got to go Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
I like that. I also like I would have also gone with the Untouchables. Would have gone with that, another too. One. But I like Blues Brothers a lot. So
That's a good one, too. Mm,
there you go. Okay, let's give out.
Chris, before you judge, let me throw one more in there for Wisconsin. I blanked on baseball.
Sure. Oh,
not a good movie, but a hilarious movie.
No, I like basketball. Ryan, rulings before I give out final scores.
Tex kind of stole my thunder because I definitely went and looked at some films that were set in Wisconsin. I was like, oh, basketball's got to be it. That's number one. But, yeah, I mean, just go ahead and give Mike his zero. Let him take this Elvis round.
RoboCop's not even filmed in Detroit.
It's set in Detroit. That's all that matters.
It has probably the best line about the Detroit Tigers in history there. Come on, Sal. The Tigers are playing tonight.
I never miss a game. Look, this is the thing, though, is that I have every Tarantino film on my shelf right now on Blu-ray. I have True Romance on Blu-ray. You're still getting a zero.
this is ridiculous, man.
Man, listen, okay. So 0 points to Mike. Tex, I'm bumping up to four for remembering basketball. Ted's getting three. Lester is getting four because, again, a bunch of good movies in Chicago. So, okay. Let's get one last question in here. I almost want to end on that note because that was just such a good note to end on. But let's do this to kind of close out. This is from Sandbun. What improvement / change has your team made going into 2016 that has been overlooked by opposing fans or the national media that you think will be significant? I'm going to start with Mike just to try to give him a chance to redeem himself here.
Well, I'm going to go with, now, this is going to sound crazy, but I'm going with the receiving corps. Obviously, you see the loss of Calvin Johnson, and that is all anyone sees in the media as fans of other teams. All they see is that Calvin Johnson's gone. What they refuse to see is they got Golden Tate, they've got Marvin Jones, two guys that are proficient in yards after the catch, and especially proficient in catching the ball. They both have excellent drop rates. You've got Theo Riddick, who's another receiving threat, who's pretty much a slot receiver anyways. You've got Anquan Boldin coming in, who's going to be a veteran presence in the receiving corps. You're not going to get, you know, old numbers from Anquan, but he's going to be able to lead these guys in the right direction. He'll be able to do his part as well. And then you're going to have Eric Ebron, who is fixing to be a bigger part of the Lions receiving game plan. So I look at this receiving core and I see it as a much more complete unit than it was last year or any other year.
All right, sounds good. Let's move on. Let's get Lester. What are people overlooking about the Bears?
It's a hard question. Pretty much the Bears were pretty bad last year, and they had a lot of really rough spots on their team as far as the positions go. So, you know, they made a lot of big changes. They spent some money at linebacker. Probably the one thing that kind of got lost in the shuffle is the Akeem Hicks acquisition. He's a guy that came over from the Patriots, plays some DN for the Bears. They're five tech DN. He's just a really big, strong player. He should be an anchor of that line now for a few years. They gave him a 2-year deal. It was pretty good from the money standpoint. So, I know it's Goldman getting a lot of the press because he's the second round pick from last year. Jonathan Bullard had a really good preseason. But I think probably Akeem Hicks is the guy that kind of got a little lost in the shelf there, but he should have a really good year for the Bears.
All right. Tex, let's talk about the Packers. What are people overlooking about the Packers, if such a thing can be?
So I'm tempted to say the addition of Blake Martinez, the inside linebacker from Stanford in the fourth round, but I think people are really underestimating Jared Cook and what he might be able to bring to this offense. he's shown some bad hands in St. Louis and in Tennessee before, but here's the full list of quarterbacks that Jared Cook has played with in his career. Vince Young, Kerry Collins, Matt Hasselbeck, Jake Locker, Sam Bradford, sorry, Ted, Kellen Clemens, Austin Davis, Sean Hill, sorry again, Ted, Nick Foles, and Case Keenum. Those are the quarterbacks who've thrown passes to Jared Cook. This guy is 6'5". He ran a 4.5 40 at the combine when he came out of college. He's a huge physical target. He's going to be able to stretch the seam for the Packers. The question is, obviously, can he catch the ball? But you're going to see him split out wide. You're going to see him line up on the line, maybe in the backfield a little bit, get him moving around. I think he's really going to be a solid weapon between the 20s for the Packers moving the ball on offense this year.
All right, Ted.
You know, everybody talked about the moves the Vikings made on the offensive line. I think they'll be better, but nobody's really talking about their defensive line. And they didn't really go out and get anybody, but they kept the people they had that were free agents. And so consequently, they have their both first and second string guys back. And from left to right, you've got Brian Robeson, Linval Joseph, Sharif Floyd, and Everson Griffin, who has really emerged as one of the premier defensive ends, the pass rushing defensive ends in the NFL. And they have the depth they have, I think, is as strong and as deep as any defensive line in the NFL. Last year, Danelle Hunter was a rookie backing up Brian Robeson. It looks like he, who's not going to overtake Robeson, is going to come in on passing downs, and they're going to kick Robeson to the inside and bring out Linval Joseph on obvious passing downs. And besides Joseph, they've got Justin Traddow. And they've got Tom Johnson, who's probably one of the most underrated defensive tackles in the NFL, as far as a backup guy. He had like five or six sacks last year as a rotational guy. So when you look at not only the quality, but the depth that the Vikings defensive line has, they're going to be able to keep really good guys in the game fresh, rotating in and out for 60 full minutes. And I think that's going to be something a lot of teams are going to have a hard time matching up with from the first snap of the game to the last snap. Because everybody talks about, well, you know, line gets tired, the defensive line gets tired. You're not going to see that a whole lot with the Vikings, and the quality of play between the first guy and the second guy is not that big of a drop-off. I would argue that Tom Johnson and Traddow and Danelle Hunter could probably start on 7 or 8 NFL teams as 3/4 of a line right there. So that's where I'm going to go.
All right. Sounds good. Ryan, what are we looking at here?
I'm still just kind of reeling over the True Romance answer. I didn't really. I mean, I heard everything you guys said. I'm not too sure if I listened to a whole lot of it, but
I'm going to give Mike and Tex. I'm going to give Mike 4. I'm giving Lester and Tex 3. Ted, I only got to give 2 because I've actually heard quite a bit about the Vikings defense. I don't know about the defensive line, but I think it's pretty well known across the nation that this defense is going to be their big strong point, especially, that's kind of what they've been leaning on to go towards the playoffs. So I think that's final scores, unless Ryan's handing out a point. Ryan, what are our final scores looking like?
I'm going to hand out an extra point to Mike just as, you know, some kind of, I don't know, just some kind of offer as
home cooking.
Yeah. I don't know. Nah. I enjoyed the receiving answer. I enjoyed that because, I mean, at this point, you know, if we don't have Calvin Johnson, then the receivers in Detroit are nothing. So I'm glad Mike stood up for us. But the final scores are looking like, oh, guys, you guys aren't going to like this because they basically win everything every other year in the NFC North.
Ugh. Hold up. I thought by the way, I was keeping score. I could have sworn Ted was going to win this. Did I screw up?
I think you screwed up in counting.
Oh, no. All right. What are the final scores? Give me the numbers.
Well, I have Tex at 25, I have Ted at 24, I have Lester at 23, and I have Mike at 19.
Woo. Wow. Okay. Dead heat at the end, and it's only because I gave an extra point. So. Wow. We're going to have people mad at us. I like it.
Especially Mike.
I think my readers will be totally okay with this.
Well, that's Football Fights number two. Once again, Tex has stolen another victory. I really, as I was counting, I thought Ted had pulled it out that, you know, Sloppy Seconds had come in first, but unfortunately, he looks like he is once again second.
So I get for running my mouth at the beginning of the show. I lost 2 points.
He didn't lose any points that way, but I don't know. Anyway, I think that's it. Let's get everyone's Twitter handles. Let's go around here. Ted, tell us where to find you.
You can find me on Twitter at Purple Buckeye.
Purple Buckeye. Oh, are you a...
I'm a huge Ohio State fan.
Okay.
They're going to steamroll the country. They'd probably win the NFC North if the Vikings weren't in it.
Well, you won't find any amazing... You won't find...
Oh, boy. Just do wait until October 15th at Camp Randall, Ted.
Okay. All right. You got full stop.
Well, thankfully, we ain't got any maize and blue in here, so we don't have to worry about any of that. Mike.
Ohio State.
Mike, where can they find you? Did we lose Mike?
I think Mike quit the call.
No, I just was very mad about the whole RoboCop thing again. It's capital P-O-D underscore Peyton. All caps on the P-O-D, cap on the Peyton.
I don't think caps matter on Twitter, but yeah, P-O-D okay. Peyton.
P-O-D underscore Peyton.
Sure. Tex, where can we find you at?
You can find me at Tex Western, exactly like it sounds.
All right. And finally, Wilt Fong.
It's at Wilt Fong Jr., W-I-L-T. F-O-N-G-J-R.
With your spiffy new little picture of you being on NBCSN.
Yes, nice.
Shout out. I'm on Twitter at Detroit Southern. Ryan is on Twitter at Ryan underscore P-O-D. Thank you all for tuning in for Football Fights, and we will see y'all next time when we reconvene for another battle, and maybe by then someone will have their game stepped up to beat Tex.
Better alive, you're coming with me.
Come on. I'd buy that for a dollar. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, baby.